And I'm hoping that everybody has got the agenda in front of them. And we just want to, in terms of the presentations, we just made some few changes before we give them to the department to present. The last presentation will be the second presentation, and the second presentation will be the last presentation. That's the changes that we've made. So all the presentations are going to be done, but the third will be the second, and the second will be the third, if everybody agrees. Okay. Thank you so much. Yes, remember the last one was supposed to be on your community residential unit program. That's going to be the second presentation. And then the mining towns will be the third. Okay. Without waste of time, before we start, there is a cabinet committee meeting sitting next door. So the DG will leave us at about 10:30 because they are debating the outcome 8, which is your outcome. So he has to be there. And maybe just before I start, just to let the committee know that he is no longer the acting DG. He is the DG of the department. He has been appointed officially last week, Thursday. So, yeah, so can we congratulate? And yeah, the committee will be told, will be informed in time about the celebration that Honorable Carter is looking for. But in the meantime, let's continue with the work at hand. And the first presentation is the responses to human settlement issues raised during the State of the Nation address. Can we have that presentation? Over to you, officials. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Chair. We're not going to waste much of your time. We'll go straight to the presentation, and my colleague, Nabu Chen, will lead us on that presentation.
Thank you, Chairperson, members of the committee, colleagues. Chair, we've circulated the documents, and in relation to that, we've also included just some of the issues around the budget speech that were covered post-Persona. So we've covered Persona as well as the budget speech. Chair, the slides 2 and following, we've just given an indication so that a recap of what the National Development Plan recommendations are specifically in relation to Chapter 8, because members and yourself will know that President Zuma places a substantial amount of emphasis on our ability to be able to align our programs in relation to the National Development Plan. And specifically, I think one of the issues that perhaps as government we have not communicated is that all our plans are premised on the National Development Plan. And I think it came out very strong in particularly the State of the Nation address, not only this year but over the last couple of years. The Chair, you'll see that the NDP recommendations, those are the ones that are covered in the, so we just recap in relation to outcome 8. And then we've also, on slide 4, you'll notice we've just given a recap of what the medium-term strategic framework human settlements priorities are. And then also the strategic goals. So this just gives us an indication. So in relation to the responses to SONA, which is on slide 6, which start, in essence, I don't have to repeat this, the key foundation for this year's SONA was economic growth and is economic growth and the 9-point plan. And what we've done is that we've basically linked what we are doing as human settlements and our programs, particularly in relation to our plans and our funding and how that impacts and the linkages with the 9-point plan. One of the things that we need to note is that as part of the cabinet processes. The department forms part of the economic cluster. The DG sits as a member of that cluster, and in relation to that, there's a substantial amount of coherence as well as interlinkages and integration at each department. So although the 9-point plan covers 9 points, each department in government is required. Chair, just in relation to our aspect, the portfolio did receive a presentation last week in relation to the catalytic projects. And part of that catalytic project, you'll note, was raised in the SONA, and there was a reference to it in relation to the budget speech. The second bullet point there, Chair, is that in relation to the current estimated costs, it's 298 billion that once implemented, that's what the catalytic projects will cost in terms of implementation. However, it's important to note that in relation to those projects, there's multiplier effects. And those multiplier effects impact on the 9-point plan. For example, a substantial amount of the material usage in human settlements, for example, construction of the house, is steel, cement, bricks. And those things have an impact on industry. And one of the things that we are discussing and with DGI is the designation. In essence, designation will require us to say these are the set of materials that will be utilized in human settlements that must be produced and manufactured in South Africa. One of the things that is under consideration by DGI is, for example, cement. That all cement that gets utilized in human settlements projects in South Africa must be manufactured in South Africa, not imported content. The same issues are being dealt with, for example, in relation to the steel. So the material usage, the bricks, the soda ash that gets utilized, for example, in the making of bricks, will be utilized and comes predominantly from one of the side effects of iron ore production. The other point, Chair, is the alignment of the government employees housing scheme and the finance linked individual subsidy program. You'll note that one of the points that of the 9-point plan was the stabilization and ensuring that there's a stable labor and there's a functional labor environment for us to be able to. And one of the things that we are in the process of, and Minister will finalize that policy for approval, is the alignment of the government employees housing scheme together. It's approximately 60% of the current government employees do not have access to housing. And part of that is to ramp up, particularly the nurses, teachers, and your middle income, and your sort of engine room of the civil service. Of importance also, a theme that has come up is the human settlements has now been delegated to chair SIP 7 subcommittee. SIP 7 is essentially the development of integrated human settlements aligned with transport and related infrastructure. So as the department, we're now activating necessary mechanisms to coordinate the planning, alignment, and funding for integrated human settlements development, including transport with municipalities. Of importance, I think, for the committee and yourself, Chair, is that there is a substantial percentage, between 30 and 40% of the USDG gets utilized for the construction and related BRT. So the integrated MyCity, Riavaya, Arieng, there's a substantial amount of human settlements money that's going into that. So so the linkages that we're speaking about, we fund it, and it's an issue. So you'll see the integration as part of developing settlements along corridors, particularly bringing poorer households closer to job opportunities. Chair, just to indicate that, particularly in relation to youth and women, you know that Minister has issued the directive that 10% of all our funding, that's both the USDG and HSDG, must be allocated to youth enterprises and professionals undertaking work in the sector. Similarly, in relation to women, there's a 30% directive that all funding, 30% of that funding must be allocated to women enterprises and professionals undertaking work in the sector. So it's across the board. Contractors, professionals, architects, all must be women. It's also important to note as part of the economic 9-point plan, where it refers to small business development, that work has begun on the development of cooperatives and human settlements, housing development. And Chair, one of the points that we need to raise is that in the Vulindlela project, for example, in KZN, there's a substantial amount of cooperatives that have been established that are, and we're using that as one of the pilots, if you want to ensure that there's a greater development of cooperatives and involvement of cooperatives in our projects. As part of the process to improve social and rental accommodation, with the department, which Shire and provinces have initiated and implemented projects in line with inner city revitalization strategies. This includes Umlazi, Joburg, Cape Town, and the Tshwane inner cities. You'll note that in the budget speech there was reference to it, although they didn't refer to catalytic projects, but a substantial amount of those projects are where we are providing infrastructure. So just in relation to Itekwini, for example, we're providing some of the bulk infrastructure for Umlazi and the development of those nodes. It's important also to note that in the integration, that together with rural development, land reform, water and sanitation, science and technology, public works and public enterprises, there's cross-cutting initiatives around all of that. And I think, just to illustrate, Chair, members of the committee, this is not something we intend doing. This is already work that we're in process of doing. So, rural development and ourselves, there's a substantial amount of land that rural development has released. Public works, and Mr. Muller from the CEO of the HDA is here. Just one example is that public works has designated the Department of Human Settlements with the HDA to be the project managers for the building of the new development bank in terms of bricks. The FNB stadium area, and part of that, or part of the site, will include a rental and social housing program, and closer to time when there's clear. But I thought it's just July. In relation to water and sanitation, we have a work group set up by the DG of our DG together with the DG for water and sanitation for Safefontein, Lions Park, to unlock the bulk problems there. Public enterprises and the like. So you'll see that this is not stuff that we want to do, but these things are actively there. It might not come out in many respects, but this is what we are doing. The migration policy, which is part of our international obligations, the department is part of the team formulating the policy. Dr. Sokoko and her team have a draft. It's just important to note that the forward-lookingness of our subsidy regime has been that it allows for non-South Africans to benefit from our projects, particularly rental. However, they don't pay a subsidized rate, they pay a non-subsidized rate. So in relation to that, they will be able to gain access to accommodation whilst they're seeking asylum or refuge, but they pay a non-subsidized rate. It's important to note, Chair members, that also the department forms part of the team led by Minister Gigaba on the UNHCR on the matters of migration, so particularly where it affects settlement and resettlement. So, for example, some of the stuff that's happening in Messina and are the other border areas. Of importance on the funding leverage as part of the budget speech, Chair, you'll note that Minister was complimented on the DFI consolidation process, which we presented to you, and there was a reference made to that. So then the next point, which was a substantial amount of emphasis given the current economic situation, not only in the country but worldwide, that we need to also indicate that as the department, and I'll ask the CFO to then just take us to some of the issues around the cost containment and the implications of the budget. CFO.
Honourable Chair, Honourable Members, thank you very much and good morning. Chair, as alluded by our acting CEO, the fiscal of the country was largely affected by the economic downturn, which subsequently affected, if not consequently affected, the revenue estimates of the country. And Chair, that on its own led, if not forced, the government to cut costs and contain costs. But if you look at, that will be the next slide, Neville. Yeah, we can skip those two slides. Yes. Now, if we look at some of the slides, they indicate how the cut affected the department in general, including other departments, as I indicated that the cuts were across the government. It was not only human settlements. But I must indicate that both our capital as well as our operational budget were affected by the cost containment, if not the cut. Specifically, and which also affects the issue of our human settlement development, whereby we have our substructures which would be affected, and I think we've indicated that as well in our communication with National Treasury, when the cut of 1.6 billion was made on our human settlement development grant for 2016, and our grant in terms of our bulk infrastructure, which is your human settlement development grant, was also affected over the period of 3 years, which is your MTF period, by 807 million. We have figures that indicate the annum in terms of the cut. The goods and services, Chair, and I think it's very much important for us to indicate that the impact that the cut on goods and services has on us managing or administrating the two grants is very high. So you would realize that in an amount of 16.7 million in 2016 was cut, in 2017-18 was affected by 17 million as well. And then if you look at the outer years, which is 18-19, came to the amount of 20 million 0.5 that was cut. And that on its own suggests to say that we need to be stringently having our own cost containment in terms of the operational budget of the department. However, it should not compromise, Chair, the management and the administration of the two grants that I've indicated earlier on. The third and the most important and the critical one is the fact that we won't be in a position to fill some of the positions that we do have, that we funded. The result that we even advised to freeze some positions, regardless of the fact that they were funded. So our compensation budget, or rather the compensation of employees budget, was also reduced by 28.9 billion, at least in 2017, 18, and 43. So we were forced, Chair, to have a sort of a limited use of the compensation of employees in and as far as the positions of the freedom of post are concerned. Next slide, please, Neville. The next slide here indicates the allocation that, as I indicated, from a date 1.8 billion, we came to an amount of 30.690 that the department would manage. And of that amount, the significance still goes to our program 4, which is the housing development finance. That includes your transfers to and subsidies to our entities. Your human settlement development grant is also sitting in housing development finance, as well as your urban development, urban settlement development grant. Hence the amount of 29.9 billion under housing development finance as a program 4. However, from an operational and other project management, you have your administration that is sitting at 442 in 2016-17, 469 in 17-18, as well as 467. It does show a little bit of an increase, but there are some cuts that one had indicated earlier as they affect the budget or the entire budget as we move over the MTEC. Our policy strategy and planning also sitting with a budget of 83 in this financial year, 88 and 86 in the outer year. The program delivery support, we support most of all the projects in provinces together with your housing development finance, is sitting with a budget of 224, and of that 29, there's an amount that is open operational with personal costs that also form part of your administration to your program 3 and your program 4, your urban settlement and development grant that are sitting there. And both operational costs over the MTEF will, in terms of the cost containment, be made possible to support the grant. And the grant, obviously, as it decreases, and I think we'll show the next slide how the impact of the decrease has made on the two grants. So we will be sitting with a budget of 85 in 18 and 19. Now, if you look at the 3 years that one is sitting, Neville, the next slide will indicate provinces. Okay, Claire, the compensation of employees I spoke to earlier on, as I indicated, that we were channeled to only use the 383 million in terms of our allocation after the budget cut, whereby the very same amount as indicated is the only amount that we could use in this financial year. Over and above that, we also have to follow the correct processes whereby an appropriation bill has to be passed as well if we are to adjust the company's compensation of employees. It won't be the same as the previous where we would actually shift funds around and the allocation letter is very clear to that effect. However, if we feel that there is a shortfall, we definitely have to go through the proper channels, reaching out to the Minister of Finance for us to increase the compensation of employees. To that effect, we are saying the current staff consists of 893. We're saying that only 646 of these are funded, and we have only filled 605. However, we still have vacancies that are funded, Chair, of 41. Within the very same framework, we have 247 positions that essentially one would say they will be frozen because they are not actually funded to that effect. We are saying the department will implement measures to ensure that the department is able to meet the shortfall, and I did indicate that within the same framework and within the structures as approved and indicated so in our government framework as well, for us to be able to come up with our human resource improvement plan. The next slide, Chair, will indicate the total budget in terms of the breakdown. Economic classification whereby compensation is sitting at 383 that was isolatedly given to yourself. The goods and services is sitting at 373 with which all the programs have to share. The payment of capital assets is just a minimal of 5. Your main budget, where it's 29.1, it's the separation of the grants from the monies that are transferred to your entities as well as to your bursary schemes that are also managed by the department as well. Your human settlement development grant, as it was affected by your 1.6, it gives us an indication that in this financial year, our projects, including your servicing of stands and the basic services as well, and the top structures, will actually take the budget of 18.2 that will be split among the 9 provinces, including your urban settlement development plan that is split within your 8 metros. That has also been significantly reduced by 807 million over the MTEF. So the two main grants that support the housing development or the human settlement development in general are ranging at 29.1 billion. The entities of which the department is also managing, you have your social housing regulator authority grant that forms part of the operations of the SHRA itself. However, it is also important, Chair, that within the midst of the SHRA funding that was allocated, there was a special cut on the restructuring capital grant, given the fact that some of the monies could not be spent in this financial year. But over and above that, they were also affected by the fact that we had some cost containment measures that have been put in place. Our housing development agency is receiving an amount of 167 million. The community MBAS will be getting 23 million in this financial year, and our National Housing Finance Corporation is getting 100 million. In this financial year and in the outer years in general, especially for our nature, as you see that it's not affected there, it's not there, it does not receive any funding, but we may be experiencing some challenges there because there's also fund shortages. The last three are managed by the department in terms of our UN Habitat, which are just general, the desert schemes as well. The next slide indicates the impact of the reduction on the human settlement development grant. I indicated earlier on that the 1.6 comes from the 19.8, hence the 18.2 that the provinces will receive in this financial year. We still have our housing receiving the biggest chunk of the budget, moving from 5.4 in terms of the indicative allocation as we had that was published in the 2015 DORA. The revised allocation is sitting at 5 billion. Your Eastern Cape receiving a 1.9, as well as the highest also going to KZN at 3.1, your Northwest receiving 2.5, and Western Cape receiving 2 billion in this financial year. The impact obviously gets back to our small province in terms of the allocation and in terms of the quintile budget. You have your Northern Cape receiving your 371 million in this financial year. And the negative summing up to 1.6 indicates the variables from different provinces, and the highest part again goes to the housing because it has the biggest part of the budget, and in terms of our calculation and regression. The outer years 17 and 18, which were at this stage in time were not affected by the cut, they still stand at indicative allocation of 21 billion and 22 billion respectively. Obviously, that at this point in time, we cannot vouch to say we will still have these figures because we don't know what the economy will bring in the next financial year. But we're still banking on planning towards our 21, if not our 43 billion over the next 3 years. The next slide indicates the urban settlement development grant as well as the cuts to that effect. The total allocation that we had in terms of our indicative allocation from the previous DORA allocation as well was 11 billion. That was impacted by 286 in this financial year and left the budget 10.8. That is actually split within your metros as well as the outer years also affected, and that sums to 807 million. The revised allocation of 10.8 is divided into our 8 metros as they have actually received their accreditation level 2, which allows them to can also manage the finances themselves. Now, if you look at the pink, which is your revised allocation for 2016, it does tell you that 236 of the amount of 11 billion was had an impact on the province's ability to also receive your bulk infrastructure in this financial year. The highest actually going to your 1.8, which is Gauteng, in terms of Ekurhuleni and your Johannesburg and the Tshwane, at a total of 5.2 billion. Your KZN receiving the highest in terms of all the metros at 1.8 outside Ekurhuleni, followed by your Western Cape in terms of the city of Cape Town, which is 1.4. And the smallest, obviously, it goes to our Nelson Mandela and Buffalo City. But the sum of these tells you today in Eastern Cape, they're sitting with a bulk budget of 1.5 that can also purchase almost all the economic amenities that will also include your bulk infrastructure or your land acquisition as well. So that chair will tell you to say we are affected by 236 M. The next slide never tells you to say, Chairperson, that sums our presentation in response to FONA. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Neville and Ms. McCarthy for that presentation. That's the response to FONA with figures and everything else. Can we hear comments and whatever you want to talk about? If you don't want to talk about, there's still time to talk about these things in the next meeting. And whilst you are thinking what you want to talk about, just remember today is the International Women's Day. So you must be very soft on Ms. McCarthy. Today is the International Women's Day. It's the 8th of March. So deal with Neville and leave Ms. Machaza alone. Hands up. Okay. Let me start with you, Honorable Sithole. Yes. And followed with Honorable Chauke. And followed with Honorable Ghana. Honorable Shelebe, do you have your hand up or you're not sure? Okay. Followed with Honorable Bam and then Honorable Ngangatabash. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Chairperson. Sanbonanno. Thank you for presentation. Chairperson, my name
is... I'm going to start by saying it, Amalama Koskas.
My name is Bessie. My name is Bessie. My name is Bessie. Chairperson, my first one is that one of they have budgeted for NFC and RAF. What I want to find out, because there's this consolidation of those entities. How are they? Why are they budgeting for these two? Because they have to use this proposal of consolidation. And the other one, Chairperson, is that. What are they going to do now differently for Gauteng, because they understand for 2015 now what are they going to do to ensure that they manage their budget, because they're always underspending, because even on paper there's about 309 million which has been shifted to other provinces, which is a disaster, actually. And the last one, Chairperson, is that one of Ekurhuleni. I'm worried, Chairperson. I will actually request and propose that if we can have an official that will be sent to Gauteng to Ekurhuleni to help them, because it is actually shocking when things are going as it's going now. The last one, Chairperson, is that one of
Thank you so much, Honorable Stolle. Honorable Chauke.
Thank you very much, Chair. My Lebong Vika, Madam. No, no, my point, Chair, is just two areas that I will need a clarity on. One is this issue of material. You raised the issue of production of cement and steel. And I know for a fact that we're importing more cement outside, especially in China. Secondly, our steel capacity has dropped dramatically. So the fact that one of the biggest producers of steel, not much, in fact, the iron ore which get processed in China and come back in the steel form back to South Africa. How are you going to deal with such matters? And especially because the mining sector, iron ore has just dropped to zero. There's not much production of steel in the country as we speak. How are you going to deal with that? What will be the issue that I want to bring to you? But we, most of the issues will have covered the minerals strategic plan. I don't want to see the new member, please bear with me. But for me, these are very critical areas because, you know, we've dealt with these issues in the last 20 years. I remember first chair when Minister Joslovo, he started the department many years ago. He raised the issue of manufacturing of material by local. And 20 years down the line, we're still seeing exactly the same. I just want to see how far and what are the plans there in relation to ourselves and those who are producing material. Yeah, those are my points. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Honorable Kana?
Thanks very much, Chair. And Chair, I think following on what Honorable Chauke is asking around the proposal, around the procurement, which I'm not sure how well published or the policy around that, because for me it's the first time I hear it and what impact it will have, especially when you look at the small business owner, which most of our contractors are. From the court side, you know, whilst it might make sense from a manufacturing perspective to encourage our contractors to buy what we manufacture in the country, but then in the greater scheme of things, the cost differences, because obviously the reason people go into business is to make money, and now if we put limitations in terms of the products that they have to use or to buy, is it not eating away at their profits and so forth? And I understand that we are not against the market. That's why we have U.S. chickens now walking our streets. I'm not sure how much China has. I didn't know that the cement comes from China, but Honorable Chokin has just told me that it comes from China. How much China, or what will be the response of China to this kind of an engagement, you know, because you know these things with the chickens nearly cost us access to AGOA. So this kind of a move, has it been thought out beyond the human settlement in terms of the relations with the other the other countries that do trade in cement with South Africa or any other building material? I think it's a question that we need to check on. There's an issue of I didn't know that we do offer. I mean, we do have non-South Africans benefiting from some of our human settlement programs. And you're talking of them benefiting from it's kind of a non-subsidized rate. And I'm not sure about these rates and how that policy works. Is it the policy that's in place, or is the policy that you are thinking of in terms of the migration? And how much different will those figures be in terms of qualifying criteria and the repayment portion thereof? So, finally, I was excited when the Minister of Finance tabled his budget in Parliament, because he was mentioning a lot of figures around human settlements, but things are going to get extra money. There was a lot of billions that they mentioned in the actual speech. But then when I go through this, in essence, we didn't get extra money. We have, in fact, lost money. And now, it was that announcement that the Minister of Finance made just to repackage or to soothe our, I don't want to say frustration, but to just, I don't want to say misleading, because if I said the minister misled us, I'll be called out of order. But the impression that was given was that human settlement is getting extra money. But then today we get that human settlement has actually lost almost 2 billion rand, I mean, over 1.5 billion that has been lost. So I'm just trying to reconcile the two statements, one from the Minister of Finance and one now from the department. So because it's kind of misleading in that I think it was 32 billion that was mentioned, and then the figures that I said there, I think it's around 29 billion. So the 3 billion didn't get lost between then and now that the minister talked about.
Thank you very much, Honorable Ghana. Those civilians are not walking, they come frozen. I thought I must clarify that. Unfortunately, they can't walk. Honorable Bump.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you to the department for the presentation. Though it is unsettling in a number of ways. In terms of the Ekurhuleni allocations, that has been dealt with. And I would piggyback on Ghana's comment on the allocation on the share that is supposed to be given to the small operators, and also the supervision of how much of local content is supposed to be given to be, I don't know what I'm talking about. Just hang on a sec. Let me gather my thoughts. I've lost track. About the small operators, is there any provision made to look into the beneficiation of the small operators within the country as against those conglomerates who are coming from abroad, like the Lafarges and so on, because now they've established themselves in the country. But the small operators, I have a feeling that they are not benefiting from this advantage, and also that the small operators are not really upskilled, or maybe this is a responsibility of the Department of Small Businesses, but they are not benefiting from the advantage of from the department of making them benefit from the human settlement. Also, I don't know what protocol of allocation is given, because in the Eastern Cape, for instance, when you talk of funds going to the Eastern Cape, it's usually the metros that benefit, and I'm not sure how much of this is given to the other areas in the Eastern Cape, because you often hear of the contractors and people in the construction industry complaining of neglect by the department. I'm not sure what is done there, but we are always hearing of these complaints that you know, there is not enough given to the small towns and the municipalities. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Pam. I'm sure some of your queries will be answered adequately during the budget vote. But anyway, Honorable Ngangatabasha.
Thank you, Comrade Chairperson. Proudly South African product, thumbs up. The second one is on the integrated human settlement development, where you including the transport within the transport department within the municipalities. I want to reiterate the electricity. I know Eskom is the giant that provides electricity. I'm aware of that. But there are metros that buy electricity from Eskom. Hence, they do direct the provision of electricity, the bulk and the reticulation and the connection. They receive grants from National Treasury, but those grants don't talk to the target of human settlement. Let me make an example. One metro will say will deliver 15,000 human settlement opportunities, and then the department, electricity department in the metro, is only allocated by the National Treasury to connect only 10,000. So there is that misalignment. So within, when you deal with the integrated development plan, it's important that somewhere, somehow, you include or meet with the National Treasury and those metros that have those departments, so that this alignment misalignment is rectified, then the plans accordingly. And on the cooperatives, we encourage that we would like to see more women cooperatives. We know that this is an example, but I don't think that we have created really a number that we would say we are comfortable with. Encourage more of women-led cooperatives. And then on the policy within the, that is chaired by the Minister of Home Affairs, so policy, IMC team, whenever you are ready, Chairperson, they are ready, would like to get a presentation so that we have a bigger understanding. I don't want to piggyback on the issues that have been raised before we really get a consolidated report and have a better understanding. On the MTF cycle, under entities, my follow-up question is that how are you going to consolidate those funds? Because seemingly you have already budgeted it on the MTF, but you are going to consolidate the entities before the end of the MTF. So how are you going to consolidate the funds as it is and put it in one bank account, or how are you going to deal with that? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. I'm handing over to the officials to respond.
Thanks, Chair. My colleagues will assist. Chair, on the point of Member Sithole around Gauteng and Ekurhuleni, I think it's important to note that both the DG and Minister are very hands-on, specifically in relation to ensuring that the initiatives that we've taken to restore the proper delivery in Gauteng takes place. And I think what we can say is that there are positive signs, particularly in relation to the hands-on nature, both of the MEC, and we can also indicate that there is a new acting or an acting HOD to be able to bolster that, together with the HDA who have been roped in to assist with that. It's an HOD, so I'm just informed by Mr. Molloy, it's an HOD. In relation to Ekurhuleni, I think it's also important to note that the department has the HDA have signed an agreement with the Ekurhuleni Metro to assist not only in terms of their human settlements program, but their overall program in relation to the USDG. And I think at an appropriate time you'll see those benefits. Those are the initiatives that we've taken. I think what we've done is that as the department we've taken initiatives, and I think what we need to be able to do is to then allow them or those efforts to mature. Chair, on the point by Member Chalker, particularly in relation to the materials issue, I think it's common cause that in South Africa, one of the things that we haven't done well is beneficiation of our materials. And part of the process that particularly DTI is driving is the beneficiation and the designation. So it's about making sure that the steel we produce gets utilized in South Africa. And I think, Chair, you know, without wanting to take over their responsibility, but they've got I think a lot of the good work that DTI does, particularly around beneficiation and improving beneficiation industries around a whole range of things. Just an example outside of our is, you know, South Africa, in terms of, we have one of, in just outside in Rosslyn, we have a coach-making facility which builds locomotives. And the question one then asks is, you know, it's designation of that. An example that was given is that even the United States does not allow any outside materials or manufacturing for Amtrak. Everything in those American railways is made and built in the United States. And it's a whole range of countries. I think what we have to be able to realize in as a South African is that we've got to be able to make those trade-offs between the cost and internal benefits in relation to employment, socioeconomic development, even sometimes if there's a premium to that cost. So those are the issues. And that's why, together with DTI, and I think it's a DTI initiative, so it's not only in human settlements, but it's across the board where they're fostering this issue around beneficiation, and as a result of that, the subsidies they designate. In this industry, you will not buy anything unless it is made in South Africa. We are seeing that particularly in relation to cement. So, yes, there was a time and there's a period in relation to, for example, where a substantial amount of cement was being imported. But I think if you know, for example, Dangote Cement has just established a facility in South Africa. And as part of that, and I suppose it's a fellow African investment in our country. So Dangote, PPC, and that is coming up. So those issues are being attended, and I think it's important to note, Chair, that it is led by DTI, and obviously as a department, it's our responsibility, and we believe it makes a substantial difference. Chair, the issue on the...
Chair, I don't know what processes we're going to follow. Do we make a follow-up or
do we
wait for him to
finish? Can we allow them to finish?
Okay.
To respond, yes. Thank you.
Chair, in relation to the budget, I think the theme of the budget was the consolidation, you know. And I think when you look at the allocations, you must look at the allocations over the MTF. So yes, as a result of some of the constraints that we currently experience in, you'll see, for example, 2016, across the board, as a nation, there's been certain restrictions, cost containment. But if you look at the outer years, those outer years reflect additional allocations. So I think what we need to be able to do is to be mindful that we're in a difficult period, we're obviously going to come out of it. So if you look at the overall period of the MTF, I think what we've said as a department and through the leadership of the DG and the minister is that we'll come out of this. So yes, the positiveness that we experience is in 17, 18, 18, 19, because those our allocations get restored to where they would have been had we not had this difficulty in relation to this. So that's the important thing to note, that over that period that happens. And it's also important to note that in relation to human settlements, it's about redirection, reprioritization, and ensuring value for money. And I think that's one of the good things when you go through a difficult time, is you start ensuring that you get value for money, and those things carry through even when the good days do come back, which they will. In relation to the supervision of the local content, as I said, Member Bum, the DTI has got these, I mean, they're quite strict about it, Chair, around supervision, ensuring procurement policies, the chief procurement officer, so each department, and we will have to abide by these local content, women empowerment, the youth, ensuring that youth enterprises do. So it's not us supervising ourselves or being referee and player, but there's other departments that are ensuring that happens. And it's particularly in relation to small operators and sourcing. I mean, one of the things that one does, one might not be aware of is that a substantial amount of, for example, brick making occurs through small enterprises and cooperatives, but we have not been doing well. I think we must admit, particularly in relation to that, and we've got to improve, and this is an opportunity for us to do that. Chair, on the issue around the allocations or a better spread and ensuring that there's equity in allocation, Chair, when we do come back with the budget, you'll see that we've taken steps to ensure that there's no sweethearts regions, and it must reflect what the need is and what the priorities are in those different. On the issue around the fund or the grant alignment, there is an understanding that there's a substantial amount of misalignment. So you'll see, for example, in the electricity, USDG again gets used to top up and electrify houses, but the alignment or the misalignment is still there, and we have not got a formula that says we're doing well on that. But mindful, and I think Dr. Sokoko and them are here, there are a substantial amount of work that is being done with Treasury, together led by DPME. Minister Khadebe's department is quite instrumental in making sure that we achieve those alignments. I'm not sure, Pascal, and colleagues, if there's a question.
And who's responding?
Okay, I was hoping that the Acting CEO would put the slide on the budget, so that we also respond to the concerns and as far as the increase of the, that the human settlement has received. I think that there's two responses to this. If we look or if we direct members back to the slide suggests that, and as in terms of the budget speech, the minister had indicated a budget of 34, or rather 62 billion, for human settlement development grant, but that amount is for period over the MTF. And then on the USDG, it gives us an amount of 34 billion over 3 years. But I must indicate that in the allocation letter that we've received, particularly for project and management capacity in the building, we've just received a minimal 25 million. So when people or when members read the allocation letter, there would be that indication that there was an additional amount of 25, but it's not significant, because if you look at the 16.7 billion that we have decreased on your goods and services and any other reduction, they take a toll more than the 25 that we've received. However, as we had indicated, we are putting measures to use the same money significantly for the purpose of human settlement development on the ground. And I think the COO had indicated that in terms of Ebuliene again, we will be seeing any significant improvement based on the intervention that we have put, Chairperson, and the fact that the issues of the grant are non-alignment, I think we've noted that as well. But I must also indicate that in the previous financial year, and probably that's where the increase can come in, our HSBG budget was sitting at 18.2 billion, and the increase in this financial year is also a minimal of 80 million, if you look at it from the figure point of view. But it's an amount that is actually lowered in the indicative allocation, and we look at that versus it, there is a slight decrease in the budget as well. Chairperson, thank you very much.
Thank you so much. Mr. Mloy?
I think the only other figure that featured prominently in the budget speech was the 130 billion of value. It's not a budget allocation. I think he was talking about the value of what the minister called integrated land development projects. But if you look at that, then you take it in context, is that it was a descriptive way of talking about the same stuff that we're talking about in terms of catalytic projects or mega projects. And if you look at the listing of some of the areas of development that we're talking about, they correlate with some of our own work, including A2 Gateway, talking about Kunogi, but linking also, I think, in a broader context to efforts that have been done at provincial and local government, including, I think, specifically talking about the corridors of freedom in Gauteng. So that for us, I think, was also a positive, that if you look at the quantum that we presented to you when we presented catalytic projects last week, we're talking around the same amount of figures, especially for government-led projects. If you add the private sector, I think it went up to about 324 billion. Maybe just to make a point that I don't want us to sit here and hope that we'll be able to address all economic and trade policy issues. But I think for us, the key underlying point is that our mandate and the way we interact, especially with the economic development cluster, is to be able to take takeouts for human settlements development across the country to benefit sustainable human settlements. But as a sector, yes, if there are beneficiation, manufacturing, and other technologies and that would influence us working differently will benefit as well.
Thank you so much. Are you finished, officials? I want to actually suppress Honorable Chauke in the sense that if you look at the agenda of next week, we will be doing the APPs and budgets, and that question can come up again. And you can raise it. Maybe at that time you would have prepared enough, because right now I just want us to go to the next presentation on the CROs. But what you could do, probably raise the question, but they are not going to respond to it. Then they will go with it and come back to respond to it next week, but they are not going to respond now. Okay?
Mama, thank you, Chair. What is important, let me say, is that when we raise issues, we have to raise them and make sure that we're able to give Parliament detailed information on those issues. It's not because we want to sit and listen to. It's important that this information is shared. You are a stakeholder together with DTI, another department, and we have gone general on the response on the manufacturing part that benefits your department. You have not gone detailed. You have gone general. So what I'm going to ask, Chair, is that in the next engagement, give us that detail. If there's a policy arrangement, either in that cluster that the minister is now chairing, and that discussion happens at that level, let the committee have information. So that we can then pin it down and say, we know that we have created so much, when we do oversight of this, we have created so much opportunities for small scale, you know, people who are producing steel and all of that. We have benefited under our Department of Housing. So it's very important, that point, by the way. It's not one of the points, as I hear your colleague say, that we can sit here and then deal. No, we have to. You raise this thing in Parliament, it's one of the most important points that you have made. And I think that in the next engagement, we'll definitely have to be given an opportunity to understand this particular impact on the department.
Okay. Thank you so much. I think it's noted by the officials that in the next engagement, when we do that EPP and then the budget, probably try and get into details a bit around that issue. Thank you so much. Can we then go to the next presentation, which deals with the review of the CRUs?
Thank you, Chair. Chair, I will then give over to Dr. Sokopo, the Acting DDG for Governance Frameworks or the Policy Unit, who has undertaken this work.
Thank you very much, Chair. Members, colleagues, good morning. The Community Residential Unit Program is a program that was meant to provide affordable rental and also to deal with hostel redevelopment. Because of many challenges that we came across, there was a need for us to review the current CRU program. But then we then undertook a study, and we're here then to provide you with the outcomes of that study before the presentation of the proposals. So I'll quickly give you the background and the findings and the process of consultation with regard to how we're going to deal with the program. The background of this is that there are 181 public sector hospitals that are in each and every province. And we also know that the comprehensive plan was conceptualized to ensure that we're providing a social housing program and also converting the hospitals into family units and instead of the communal facilities that we originally had. The CRU as a sub program is a sub program therefore of the social rental. It provides rental intervention to people that are earning up to 3,500 rents per month. And there are 8 options that are provided in that program as a background to that is in the policy. Some of the options that are available, it includes the stabilization option, so which means if the building itself is not suitable, then the building can be rehabilitated. There's also the demolition option, refurbishment, and the conversion of the building for residential purposes. There's also issue of that can also not necessarily be used for only hostels, although it's mainly used for hostels. But the CRU program can also be used to provide infills. That is, because the main issue is to provide affordable rental options. And also, the program itself, it also provides long-term maintenance for the CRU because the people are not expected to pay large amounts of money in terms of rental. Next slide. As I indicated, the main issue was that there were challenges that were experienced with the program, and as a result, then we felt that we needed to do some research to ensure that to find out what is the challenges that are experienced and what are the issues that we need to put into the revision of the policy. The second issue was that because we are already starting to develop the new white paper, there was also a need for us to also learn from the program to ensure that we don't repeat the same mistakes. So the program was implemented since 2007, and since then we have provided 29,837 hostels with affordable rental. And the amount that has been utilized is about 9.5 billion rand. And that was provided throughout the provinces, excluding the Eastern Cape. And we had 78 projects since 2007. And of that, approximately 9% were undertaken as part of the redevelopment or refurbishment of the existing hospital. So a large amount of the money, of the money, was targeting hospital redevelopment, as much as the program itself was not just about the hospital, but a large percentage targeted the hospital. In this finding, we also found that the average cost per unit is high, more than the current scenario, is 319,000, that is the unit, the average cost. Also the site, because there are no standards regarding that. Also, we found that the size of the unit, they range between 46 square meters to 65 square meters. And also we have two-bedroom units, so we also have three-bedroom units, all of them as family units. So that's what you're seeing in front of you is just an illustration of what we have thus far in terms of the average cost per unit, because this was not curtailed. So it ranges from province to province. And in some cases, we have areas where we have 3,725, and in some areas we have 10,000 per square meter. But also, the average cost also, it also depends on what was done, whether that was a refurbishment or it was just a minor changes that needed to be done or demolition needed to be done. Next one, please. What we also find is that these, because they are high costs, as you also see, of demolition, and also the cleaning up of the site and the rehabilitation of the site. And also we found that sometimes these hostels were not in a terrain that is suitable. They were in less than ideal terrain, and therefore then many things needed to be done to ensure that this foundation is secure, they are in the site is rehabilitated. And the cost then kept on escalating. Also, originally the grant was to fund the construction of the substructure. It did not have to deal with all the issues around demolition, cleaning of the site, provision of water and sanitation. The original thinking around the program was that it should not deal with that. But eventually, in practice, there was no funding for all these things, and then the funding for CRU had to pay for all these things. Also, there was an implementation toolkit that was developed as part of the implementation of the program. But the research found that it was ignored, actually, in the implementation, that is that the implementation toolkit. And the majority of the allocation was driven by just there is the allocation, and therefore we need to use the money, because there was no norms and standards regarding what is the size of the unit, how much can you use, unlike the other programs that we had. The next one. Also, one of the major issues that we found is that 25% of the gross monthly income is only one of the assessment tools in the toolkit. That is, now we're talking now about the beneficiaries. That the beneficiary, when the assessment is done of who qualifies and who doesn't qualify, it is said that they should not pay more than 25% of their gross monthly income, which is the standard. Actually, the standard sometimes goes up to 30%. As the qualification criteria. Then also that we found that sometimes that qualification criteria is limiting, simply because that people were indebted, and also that also the amount that they must earn, that is, was also very limiting. That is, 2,200 that they must earn, and that they have to pay 800 rand because sometimes that 800 rand, as much as it is, it looks very little, but for somebody who's earning 3,200, it's very high. Also, the management of the program, that you find that the rent collection is very, very low. So the whole challenge starts from the construction, including once the units are done, then there's also problems with regard to management of who pays, who doesn't pay. As a result, then the rental collection as it stands, I mean, even the 18% that the study found is regarded as too high, because that's the average percentage. In some areas, you find the rent collection is as low as 0%. The next one. There are proposals that are made in the study. And one of the proposals is that we need to use CRU as a capital grant for redevelopment of existing public sector hospitals, which means the main objective of the program should remain. Also, the proposals are saying that we should shift the new built CRU to social housing. So CRU as it stands should remain as a hospital redevelopment program. But if we are going to develop CRU in the greenfield, that should go to social housing. Also, there's also a proposal that says that we need to have such specifications, which is your normal standard that says these are the measurements. You should not exceed this the unit. Also, different types of units, that we should not only have one, two bedroom or three bedrooms. Maybe we need to consider one bedroom or bachelor units. So we need standards. We also need standards in terms of the maximum amount that can be spent. I think that is the almost the last slide. Also, I indicated that the set construction limits, there are proposals around the set construction limits that could be set, regarding also how we need to deal with the management of the tenants that goes in and out of the units. So it ranges from 139,000, which is the, if we put normal standards, that some of the key proposals, to 395, which is a two-bedroom, which is in line now with the social housing development. Also, the issues around the proposals is also about the change of terminology, that we should not be talking about CRU. We should just talk about affordable rental. This is, in terms of affordable rental, we need to offer a range, which is currently now in the what we are working on in the terms of a new policy. Also, we need to improve the management. As I indicated, that the rent collection is very low. So the main issue is about how then do we, what are we putting in place to ensure that we improve management of the hospital, but not only about rent collection, also ensuring that there's maintenance, continuous maintenance of the properties, and that they don't go into a state of non-repair. The last proposal is that we need to negotiate funding for CRU engineering services, which was not originally in the old policy, which is what we said, that the water and sanitation services were not originally in the new policy, in the old policy. The old policy was just saying that this is what we need to put up in terms of the top structure. Thank you very much. There has been, in fact, the last one, that there has been a consultative process that has been undertaken with regard to the new proposals in the CRU, and we have not yet completed that consultative process. And once I think that we have redeveloped the proposal, I think we'll come back and present that to you. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Probably before I open up to my colleagues to ask questions, maybe the last point that you're raising is a very critical one. That says the committee itself, because this is a major policy shift. And I think it's important that the department actually, the meeting like this is not going to be adequate to discuss this. And that probably we need to make sure that there is a workshop that will be put in place for the committee so that we understand exactly what we are dealing with. That's my proposal before I allow the members to come. I really propose that there would be a need for a workshop on this, probably coupled that with the last week's presentation on the rectification policy and deal with that in a workshop form. But members can ask questions and clarities. It's still a work in progress, so we need to make sure that we understand what's going on here. Let me start with Honorable Horai for a change and not start with Honorable Stroll, because CRU's is his terrain. So I'll start with Honorable Horai and then go to Honorable Stroll, go to Honorable Bada, and then go to Honorable Memezi, Honorable Ghana, and then Honorable Ngakasabashi.
Chairperson, thank you very much and thanks for the presentation. My speaking is about the, I think the one that I was also going to propose, the one that the chairperson just proposed, but I want also to understand this one of the improve the CRU management. It should be clear because there are a lot of problems in the CRUs that we encounter, even if we are doing the site visit. And I wonder what is the role of the intake of the municipalities in terms of this management of the CRUs. I wanted to know, because you said you have met and then we are still discussing the matter and the intake of the municipality. The second one, Chair, this one I just rectified myself because I look at it and say, Eastern Cape, there is no hostels. And I look at your slide that shows really in Eastern Cape, there's 0000. Then I realize there's no hostels. There's no mines in Eastern Cape. Lastly, Chair, if the presenter or the department can tell us the, in terms of the money, the budget itself, can the budget, because now we realize that the budget has been reduced. The possibility of meeting what you have proposed and on this program, on this review, whether do we have enough money and to do all what we wanted or we wish to achieve on this program. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair, and we must thank the department. Chair, first of all, my input has been hindered by your proposal, because actually it covered my because we cannot deal with this in a short space as we are doing now, because there's a lot of issues that we need to address in the CRUs. But my chairperson is just only one now. Is that one of they say they developed 2023. They have 23 projects in Gauteng. Where are those projects in Gauteng? Which hostel are they talking about? Because what I only understand is about few, but they say now they have 23 projects. And the other one, chairperson, is this one. What are they going to do with the allocation of money that they have budgeted for the demolition of horses? Like 65 million in Togoz and 14 million in Binoni. I'm just touching the few. What are they going to do with those budgeted money?
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you for the presentation. I was reluctant, Chairperson, to participate after you have proposed, but I didn't, at the same time, I didn't want to not to say something because this is the area that I'm passionate about. But just few, perhaps two questions. When you say you want to shift from CRU to social housing, did you consider perhaps because the conditions and the requirements were not the same at the time? So, and perhaps and in terms of program management, I once experienced a situation where I think it was the CRUs in Langa. I think they were managed by HDA, and then because of poor management, it ended up being dumped in the municipality. I think the reason why I'm raising that, I don't want us to talk, but I think the lessons that were learned and perhaps they form part of your consultation with the municipality. So I reserve my comments further because I believe that with the proposal of Chairperson, we will be workshopped and ask more relevant questions. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Kata. Honorable Mimes.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Thank you very much to the presenter. I think she gave a bit of clarity to the issue. So I think the chair is noting that. With the proposal from the chair that maybe the best approach is to have a workshop, I think in preparation to that, because this area is quite a problematic area, is dealing with the part of us in South Africa. So it's a mammoth task that I don't think will solve within a speed. So, but we must be aware that it's we're dealing with a feature, a ugly South African history. Even in Eastern Cape, the house, I think if you go to the old township to find hostels, even in Gangeliswe. So which means when we come to the workshop, I think we should be given a picture of our townships so that we know where we were left with the past situation, the apartheid situation. I think we must be honest so that we're not blaming what we have to ourselves. I think if we do that, at least we'll appreciate where we are. I think the workshop chair will assist. The background will also solve many of our problems because what is also happening is making it even difficult for government to realize the intentions because of the mentality of the past, that you can just open water and leave. Nobody cares. So I think there's a lot that the workshop must deal with, even including the people who are using these facilities, so which is informed by the past. We must really deal with that. Also in the workshop, we must also deal with where we have now invested money and put new facilities and are not yet able to use those. In fact, they are ghost facilities. And yet we have put a lot of your money to put those. Some are very nice, so throughout Gauteng in particular. So I think the workshop, we must see what would be the best approach. I think in this proposal, we're not really getting to the best approach, where all of us must own up. If a person wants a beautiful house, he must be able to own up somehow. So I think the workshop must deal with that, but also give us a picture of what you have already invested, where also you have not been able to put people, because those are the part of the cost you know, measures that can assist us if we own up and then see how best. It's either we sell to people who are ready to buy those properties. Well, some are nice, I must say. Thanks, sir.
Thank you very much, Honorable Khan.
Thank you very much, Chair. Chair, I support the move for us to discuss this matter further. But I think I need to put in some few points that I had prepared in the lead up to this meeting. You know, going through this report, I asked myself a question whether this program itself is still needed, given the financial constraints that we find ourselves in. I mean, we're spending exorbitant amounts of money on a single unit. I mean, some units cost as much as three times what it cost a PNG house. So in terms of the cost, I mean, if you look at the amount that has been spent thus far, almost 10 billion, and the yield of that is less than 6,000. It means that we're not actually getting value for money in terms of reaching out to many people. And if there's one proposal that's made, which I think it needs to be fully supported and explored, is that we kind of do away with CRU as a program, and we move to social housing. Because at the end of the day, that's what the people that will stay in the units are will be paying rent, and that aspect of things, I think social housing institutions can manage it better. Because the other problem that we have currently with the project that we've embarked on, CRU project, is that the management is a problem, the maintenance is a problem. And because we have given to people that are not necessarily in the business of managing these units, and one of the success aspects of the human settlement has been around social housing, because the social housing institutions are managing our social housing projects, then the maintenance is good, the payments and management is generally good. So for me, I would say that the option that we should explore much more from my end is to completely do away with the program, and then have it as part of the social housing component, and then the qualifying criteria needs to be the same, because one of the problems that we one has seen, and Honorable Sole will know, and Honorable Memezi will know, is the issue of the qualified people. I mean, when the units in Soweto were built, Dobsonville, Meadowlands, the people that were earmarked, they were earning less than 2,500. But this was almost 10 years ago. The salary does not stretch the same. Most of the people have actually now are earning more than the 3,500 cap that we have for CRUs. So now, if you were to go and try to to allocate the people of in Midlands, Honorable Memes, most of those recipients that we had identified, if they were any, wouldn't be qualified because of the cap that has not moved much. So that proposal, I think, when we go to the workshop, it needs to be explored fully. It's something that I think. From my side, reading the situation, it's something that is going to work. And the good thing about that is that we don't have to build where the hostel is. We can demolish the hostel and find a suitable land closer to where the hostel is, and then build this social housing project that will not accommodate only the people from the hostel, but it will integrate the community, because the problem now is, as you said, where if you look at Nansfield, Honorable Mimizi, if you had demolished Nansfield, it's not suitable to build any other structure. You know, you have to find an alternative land to relocate the people to. So this approach of always wanting to build where the current hotels are is what makes the project so expensive and unaffordable, because as I said, the figures that we are spending are just astronomical, and I don't think we need to go that way. And the move to, for me, I say let's go a step further, let's grab the entire program, and then let's merge it with the social housing program. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Honorable Prana. I'm sure that will be your contribution in that workshop as well. Honorable Nangakamash.
Thank you, Chairperson. The move to OCRUs to social housing is really applauded. Now that we are looking at performing it practically. But we will contribute more, Chair, in that issue. But I just want to focus myself on the consultation with the provinces and municipalities. I would love to, in the workshop, to receive a report on the contribution of provinces and municipalities, especially municipalities, because I'm aware that they are not happy with the stock that was abandoned by the by national and provinces, especially provinces to municipalities, with the burden of that kind of those kinds of buildings, that culture of non-payment, and everything that comes with the problematic areas that comes with the hostel as a program. But having said that, even those that were refurbished and upgraded as part of CRUs, it's very difficult for the municipalities to collect rentals. The revenue is not increasing. As a result, municipalities are not getting value for money. We as the National Institute, we as the Human Settlement Department, we're not getting value for money. Nobody is getting value for money from hostels. And I'm clear that you are looking at hostel residents or CRU residents that are earning more than what really you call a person that needs to be subsidized by government, because there are many of them. But the most culprits are those that are running business within the hostels. They don't pay levy for their business. They don't pay for electricity bills. They don't pay for water bills. They are not being charged as business people. And they are the ones who are causing problems in those hostels. That environment is so unconducive for human habitat. And that area is a nightmare for the municipalities. If you go to municipalities, metros, a treasury, there's no treasury who wants to fund the hostel program because of the revenue issue. Now it's really, Chair, really we're looking forward to that workshop. But also the access control, I don't hear it, doesn't come out clearly on the presentation. It's very important because as hosted, everyone gets in and out and does whatever they want to do and hide their sorts of behaviors, human behaviors you'll find in the hostel. So because there's no access control. Chair, we'll elaborate on the way. We're looking forward to that workshop. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Maybe just short response from the officials, remembering that there is a workshop coming.
No, Chair, I think we'd welcome the workshop, and we'll work with Ministry together with your office to arrange that, and I think we'd welcome that input. I think it can only make the policy that we submit to Minister better and sustainable. But we'll do that. Thanks to yourself and the committee, Chair.
Thank you so much. Dr. Sokopo, one of the things that you must research in detail, because remember the qualification criteria between the CREOs and the social housing was different. And when you come to the workshop, those are the areas that you must be able to present in detail, so that when we talk these things, we are able to come up with a conclusive decision. Thank you very much, colleagues. Let's then go to the next presentation, which is about the progress on the distressed mining towns. Whilst they are preparing, just stretch your legs. 2 minutes. Stretch your legs. Stretch your legs. Smile to each other. Laugh with one another. It's not that serious.
Okay, can we take our seats?
Thank you, Chair. Chair, just to indicate, on this presentation, we have invited our colleagues from the provinces. We've got Carol Vladi from the Free State, Mr. Mashabane from the Northwest, Hazel Zita from Mpumalanga, and then also the departmental coordinator is Pamela Sekonyani. Thanks, Chair. Chair, just to indicate, there are some replacement slides that we have circulated, and I'll just indicate where those slides are, specifically in relation to the project information. And TDA indicated that we get the provinces to be present. Chair, just to indicate what we need to, to just to ensure that we're talking about the special presidential package for the revitalization of distressed mining communities, and as part of the presidential package, the human settlements component is but one part of that intervention, which the Department of Human Settlements manages together with the various provinces in the various districts and local municipalities. Chair, it's quite a lengthy presentation, so I'll try and go through it in a manner that allows us to then discuss it in depth. Just the presentation outline, that's the presentation outline, and it just gives you an indication of the various aspects in relation to it. But also, Chair, we have made a presentation, so this is just a follow-up and an update of some of the information. Chair, there are 15 priority mining towns in the revitalization of the distressed mining communities, and there are 15 areas in 5 provinces and their associated labor-sending areas. So it's also it relates to those areas where the mining occurs, but also the predominantly areas where there's a labor-sending or households that impact on that. Chair, the slides 3 and 4 gives us an indication of the provinces, the district municipalities, and as well as the local municipalities, which form part of this intervention. So you'll see, for example, the labor sending areas, it's predominantly OR Tambo district in the Eastern Cape, Alfred and Zor, and then KZN, the Zululand district. And that represents those areas that we're focusing on. Chair, the challenges we've outlined these challenges before, and I think it's just important to note that until these challenges are removed, it's important to highlight that they still exist. So this is not about repeating stuff that's always been there. But I think it's important to note, and then also the mitigation measures, Chair, and in relation to the mitigation measures, in terms of the informal settlement upgrading not prioritized, the second on the right hand side where it says the informal settlement upgrading not prioritized in planning of provinces and municipalities, I think one of the important things to note, particularly in relation to the mining districts and municipalities where the actual mining takes place. One of the characteristics is the large numbers of households that live in informal settlements. So if you go to Lepalale, Burgersfort, those areas you'll see. So Rustenburg, there's the substantial. One of the mitigation measures is as part of the NUSP together with the provinces, all the areas have been, all the informal settlements have been assessed, except in Steve Chwete, where project and preparation work is up to date, and Hazel might want to comment on that. Okay, just on the dedicated oversight structures for the mining towns, it's important to note that there's a very good relationship, and I can say this without fear or favor, between ourselves, Mineral Resources, DPME, who Minister Khadebe chairs the IMC, and his DG, and this is one of those programs and interventions that in fact the DG in our department places a huge amount of emphasis on, and for good reason. Chair, just again, what the challenges are. Okay, then we give a report on projects, and what we can say just in summary is that project implementation and preparation has commenced in all provinces except Gauteng, where that's been particularly slow. And one of the reasons for that has been particularly the lack of bulk and link in those areas, because one of the things that occurred as a result of the mining in those areas is that a large amount of the bulk capacity, either in terms of water, energy or sewer, was utilized for the mining operations. And what we're in the process of doing is now rebuilding some of that or reinstituting some of that capacity so that communities themselves. There's an intervention currently underway between the Minister and the Premier to address the underspending and underperformance, and that's part of that intervention that was spoken about. There's close linkages, as we've indicated, between water and sanitation, infrastructure, MIG allocations and spending, particularly in the area. There's more partnership projects with mining companies required and models for this discuss. Chair, and at an appropriate time, we'll sort of give you just the lowdown that the criticism that we want to the point that we want to highlight is that government makes a huge amount of investment in this, and that concomitant relationship or ability to have it matched by the private sector sometimes is something that lacks. But through negotiation and discussion, we'll get it there. Then the rental accommodation, particularly given in those mining areas, and Muzi will indicate some of the issues on the ground in the northwest, for example. The labour standing areas, Chair, I think what we need to just indicate is that at the next presentation, we will provide the interventions that we're making clearly. Just to note that the Department of Human Settlements is also part of the PAKISA program that was initiated by the Presidency to fast track a range of these interventions, and one of them that we're working on, and the detail we'll provide in the next quarter. Chair, that just gives an indication, and I'm hoping that this slide's still relevant. We've given you an indication of the settlements, the progress, particularly in relation to the planning for the informal settlement upgrading. Chair, and then the next slides will just give the indication on the Free State. You'll see these slides from 10 to 34, the ones that we've given you the replacement. In the original presentation, Chair, there was still some verification at the time that we sent out the presentation on the budget that was spent as well as the progress, and hence we had asked colleagues from the respective provinces to be here. So if there's detailed points or questions, Chair, but what we will do is that we'll ensure that those pages are provided and updated accordingly, although we've given you those in there. So we give you the Free State, Machabeng, as well as all the areas that are there in relation to which municipalities as well. Chair, you'll note that the last time we indicated we've given you the projects so that the portfolio is aware of which are the projects, so if there's interest and oversight that you want to carry out in relation to this, it's available. In Limpopo as well, Chair, just a point that the colleagues from Limpopo had attended an apology, so we asked them. But it just gives you an indication in terms of Limpopo, those districts and municipalities, and there's a substantial amount of work that's happening there. Mpumalanga, Imalashleni, Steve Twete, then the Northwest, Rustenburg, Moses Kotane, Maribeng and Matlosana. We give you the details as well as the projects that are there. And then the Northern Cape, we give you the indication there. Chair, the one that's outstanding is Gauteng, you'll notice, and that's because the information was not available at the time of presentation. Chair, we also then give an indication of the loan funding. So in relation to the specific areas, our three entities, namely Nurture, they provide bridging finance. The Nurture, Ralph, as well as the NHFC. Chair, if you go to slide 38, this gives you just basically, and I think this is the essence of the report today. It gives you an indication, Chair, of for this financial year, you'll see that in the mining towns, we had targeted 4,000, in those areas, we had targeted 4,499 sites to be serviced with 2,098 units to be built. What we have been able to achieve up until the 31st of January in those areas was 1,114. And then in the Mpumalanga, Northern Cape and Northwest, the sites that was targeted was 13,945, units 11,000. What we've managed to achieve in that period is 2,515 sites serviced. And then houses constructed 7,430, and colleagues will give better details of that. Chair, what we also are finalising, and that is that although the program is in place and there's plans and there's implementation occurring, the strategy, particularly around the overall strategy that drives this, will be finalized during the course of this financial year, and it's one of those points that we've indicated is being retrofitted in relation to the plans and the implementation plans that are implemented. Chair, part of that strategy is the analysis. So we've done detailed analysis around home ownership, investment, traditional land, a whole range of things. So you'll see it's been comprehensive in relation to the slides 45 onwards. It gives you an indication of what that strategy will include. And then as part of our program in relation to Pakisa, we've gone through each of the municipalities. So you'll see the program plan. I think this is just to indicate to the committee and yourselves, Chair, the intensity and the nature of the work, particularly in relation to the planning, the implementation, and what we want to be able to achieve. So we've given you detail in relation to Cluster 1. Cluster 2, which is the Rustenburg Madibeng area, the Cluster 3, which is Merapong, Matosani, Mohali City, that area. And so it's not about a one size fits all, Chair. So in relation to each of the areas, because I think one of the things that we need to be clear is that each of these areas has specifics attached to it. So the intervention that take place, for example, in Matlosana would be different around Machabeng, because you've got mines in development stages, mines which are in the latter stages of their lives. But I think the important point about this is that this intervention is about the human and the household. And it's about the sustainability of households and human development in those areas over the period of the mine or the mining activity. Chair, we give you each of those clusters, and there's five of those clusters. Chair, then we also indicate what are some of our partnerships with the mining companies, and that includes Anglo Plat, Lonmin, BHP Billiton, and then in relation to also the funding agencies between ourselves, the DBSA, as well as the agencies that are there. Chair, the recommendation, Chair, on the partnership, I think it's just important to note that our primary implementing and agent of support is the Housing Development Agency, hence Mr. Molloy is also here, and the HDA represents that. So, Chair, we'll take the questions as may be required. I don't know, colleagues, Muzi, Carol, Pam, if you want to add anything. Pascal?
Okay. Maybe before questions, let's hear any additions. Mr. Molloy? No additions. Colleagues from provinces? No additions. You will respond to questions. Welcome, by the way, to the portfolio committee. I can see the hands are coming up without even me inviting them. Honorable Chuck, do you want your hand up or you're not sure yet? Let me start with Honorable Chauke, Honorable Tole, Honorable Khorai, Honorable Ghana, Honorable Memezi. Honorable Pam, you've got your hand up? No? Okay. Let's start with those two, no?
Ma'am, thank you very much, Chair. My disadvantage, obvious. I only, I'm learning from colleagues as they raise questions around this area. But obviously, I've interacted with this project in the Northwest in particular. And therefore, my question is just going to be general, Chair. Is the targeted number, overall targeted number of this project, I'm now talking not only Northwest, I'm now talking national. And at what percentage are we at with regards to delivering of these units? At the percentage wise, but at the same time, can you maybe in detail on the budget allocation of it? I know that it may be premature, but it's important for me. Just to have an understanding of, we are meeting this target that we have put ourselves in. So many units are going to be built. We've only reached 20%. It's informed by the previous slide that you raised here to say, in fact, the target was at some point 11,000. We only did 2,000. I was not, in fact, following in that sequence. But nonetheless, what is important will be the targeted, the budget, and the status of that budget. Have we rolled over the money to the next financial year, or have we surrendered an amount to treasure of units that were not able to deliver? I think it's very important. Lastly, Chair, it will be the relationship with this project and municipalities. And colleagues in the Northwest will confirm this part, that one of the biggest problems has been the beneficiary list. In fact, there's been a lot of confusion to a point that it was going to spark into a violence at some point, because there was contestation between mine workers and communities. In that particular area, the Marigana project, for example, we did some oversight in that particular area. I think if maybe we can just share with us of that understanding. And I see that in the Marikana area, the loanmen donated land and then and other projects. I'm not sure whether it's a of other projects that are sort of raised in that regard. ESCOM is nowhere to be seen in the picture. The Marikana project, one of the most beautiful projects that the department has delivered. And ESCOM, the last time I was interacting with the project, there was no ESCOM yet. And I think it will be important just to hear where we in that particular area. And when are we handing over the project to the rightful beneficiaries at some point, which is quite, I think, it's quite a very, very critical area that needed to sort of get it. But thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chauke. Honorable Stolik?
Thank you very much, Chairperson and the Presenter. Chairperson, first of all, I want to offer that by those who are representing the provinces. What about the other provinces? What happened to them? Like Chauke and Mpopo, because there is no representative from those provinces. Are they invited or not? If they were invited, why are they not here? And the other one, Chairperson, that I want to find out is the site services, Chairperson. It's choking, because I don't know how can they construct houses without servicing the site. Because of most of specifically in if you check the Gauteng and the Mpopo and some Free States. So I don't know, sometimes they can give us the reason why are they not service to the site. And the other Chairperson is that one of Free State. The standards of construction of houses in Free State are not the same like other provinces. Sometimes if they can give us, why are they doing that? Because if we are talking about they have to the standard of for construction should be the same. All houses must be the same. If it's 50 square meters, must be 50, not 100. And the last one, Chairperson, is that one of Awena. Chairperson, I want to have the clarity on donation of land. And the funding of these houses by private companies and mining, how far will that be? And the consultation with the unions when it comes to these mining issues. Thank you, Chair.
Honorable Kurai, we are not the spokesperson for Free State, Honorable Kurai. You are a portfolio committee member of this committee.
No, thanks, Chairperson. But sometimes it's important to remind our colleagues are dealing with the hostels, not the houses. And we are, if I can tell the point that we are every time in Logaiti from my honorable about the Free State, as if I don't take care of my province. Thanks very much. I'm from the Free State, Chair. Through you, I wish to know exactly who's representing Free State and get his or her details, the contacts. I'm very interested in my province. Today I'm 50 years, I've born in Free State until date. So I know Free State better. And my police are in Free State every day. So, can I ask the department, what was the cause of the understanding until the Premier of Housing and the Minister had to intervene? We must actually get what was that cause of that understanding. To Chair, to my own province, I see here there's much having only here. I know for a fact when we started this issue of the CREs, the municipality called Mukago was involved. And I was of the impression that I know there's a mines number, forest number 9, 10, 11, who belongs to the Free State. form part of that MOPAC. I don't see it in any one of the papers today. I don't know what the rationale. To three chairs, same in the free state. I see there's no spending in this Machabeng report. Tabong, Bronville, what was it? I don't see any spending here. And I wonder if the paper is good. I'm talking about this one, Chair. I never.
To respond, and you will see her nicely when she responds. Don't worry.
Thank you, Chair. Lastly, Chair, even the challenges, it seems as if everything is normal in this respect. There's no challenges here. Can I just get it said? What is happening? Why are you, there's no challenges? Thanks very much.
Honorable Kana, before Honorable Kana, you take the floor. Happy 50th birthday, Honorable Khurai. Honorable Kana.
Happy birthday, Khurai. I didn't know it's your birthday. It's a good thing, Khair as well. Chair, I would have liked to have received as the Honorable Chauke. Has raised the issue of Marikana. I think Marikana chair deserves its own report, because when it passes inside all the other areas, we don't get to talk about what's really happening in Marikana. Because what's happening there is that houses were built, houses were there built, beneficiaries were not identified, and then the mine workers allocated themselves houses. As we speak now, those houses are occupied in Marikana. And, you know, Chair, I did send a letter to you asking that we get a proper briefing on Marikana. I know this item, others will say it includes Marikana inside, but I do believe that the committee deserves a full report on Marikana. The reason I say so, Chair, is that Marikana, unlike most of the other areas, I wouldn't say it's a distressed mining town, because in Marikana mining operations are still ongoing. And when this project was started, it was to look at those areas that mining took place, and then the mining companies left, and they kind of left ghost town. Marikana is not a ghost town. There are people who are staying there. But then, because of what happened in 2012, it got included in the program, because a lot of noise was being made, and Lonmin felt that they had to donate some land. So, Chair, I still think that we need a full report on Marikana, because some of the questions that the Honorable Chauke is raising are valid questions, because there's a lot that's happening in Marikana. But bundling it or hiding it in this big report, it's not assisting us, Chair. I request that we have a formal item discussing the case of Marikana, because I just checked today with the constituency chair, the constituency of the political head deployed in that area, that the cat paths are still roaming the streets of Marikana. So that's not good. We know what happened the last time a lot of police went to Marikana. And today, this morning, the police are still in Marikana. Not at the police station, but circling where the new housing development is. So, Chair, my request is thanks.
Honorable Memes.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I think we must appreciate the report. It's quite detailed. Although the subject matter is quite important, it's also a bit emotional. It's like the hostels that we were talking about earlier on, because it reflects where we're coming from as South Africans. Maybe starting from where Ghana left, I want to indicate that Marikana is indeed an active mine. But I think what maybe colleagues should also look into the communities around Marikana access. So the mining as a mine may not, so but the communities need it. Remember, we are as government responsible for the community. So I think if my colleagues can look at it in that score, that the communities, like many of the mining communities, that they deserve our intervention. And maybe also the issue, I don't think we may agree on isolating Marikane out of all the distress money. I think the best is to impress that the report must be more detailed in each area. In each area, and because we don't want to think other areas are important. You know, when you speak to the people in Klerksdorp, they think they are not prioritized, and yet they deserve to be. You see, people of various, they deserve to be. So I think we need more detailed reporting on these projects. I think that's what I would impress on my colleagues to look into. Yeah, I think the issue of Kaspar's moving around, I think as people that are in government, we have a duty to ensure that there's peace, there's order. So as long as there's still some elements of unruly people who think they can do as pleased, so we have a responsibility to ensure that happens. So I think if we can be of one mind in as far as that is concerned. But I do agree with the Honorable Ghana that indeed we should not hide their things. When people take over our houses, I think it's something that the committee must be involved. What happened? Didn't we have security? Because when you deal with these houses, you also have people who take care. In fact, it was almost an open secret that that was likely there, like it is likely. It is happening even in our townships. You go to many township houses are invaded if you don't guard them or you don't hand over them quicker. So I think we do need, I think I agree with the Honorable Ghana that we do need a report what happened. I think as officials we must be responsible. We must take care of the monies that our ratepayers are giving to us, including those that are from the private sector. I think there we are one that we must be given a report. I think in as far as Gauteng, which is quite a busy in terms of mining, a busy area in terms of distress. So it is not comforting that the report is not available. You get it in some other parts. You know, I think we need a little bit of a detailed report because there would be projects such as Borwa in Western area, which to my understanding are mainly by us. So I think we must be given more report on these projects. There's a lot that we must be told in each municipality that I mentioned there. Mohale City, we need to know what is it. It's a distress. You know, the mine was operating in that area. It's one of the early mines, you know. So we need to know what is it that is done to take those people out of the current distress. Go to Randfontein, the same situation. I know of projects that we as government have moved, but I think we must also impress the private sector as well in those. I think we need more detailed report on that side of the private sector involvement. I'm quite happy about the involvement of the labor sending areas, because those are human beings that were used
only as a reserve for manpower. They were not regarded, those communities were not regarded as communities. They were left, so their land were taken, their cattle were taken, so that they are vulnerable to work in the mines. I think the fact that we are now considering them, I'm quite happy. For more details, if you, where you have Musa Hill, it represents Lusikisiki and Dexter. So maybe in brackets put it so that people from Lusikisiki, which is the mining towns and Flagstaff, they must know, because it's the name of a municipality named after a mountain where Vincent Revolt used to meet. It's a quite a historic name of a municipality. So I think, Chair, if I can also propose that for this subject matter, we also need a workshop, because it's quite a detailed, whether you deal with Prinsat alone, you just need more information. You go to Gauteng alone, you need more information. You go to Northwest, not only Marikane, Matosane, because we need more information in all Limpopo. We need more information. I think that idea of a day dealing with this matter in all the, so that you deal with the progress so far. I think what Honorable Chauke also put across, I think that the workshop must be informed, so which means the target, what was the target here, what did we get, where we get donation, so we quantify everything, we check how far, so that we monitor if our officials also are not sleeping on duty. So it's quite important that we will check these things. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Honorable Members. They look awake. But let's start with the officials from provinces, that they must respond to their specific issues. And then after that, we allow the national officials to respond. I thought it's going to be easier that way. Let's start with Free State. Honorable Horai, open your eyes. Free State is responding.
Thank you very much, Chairperson and Honorable Member. My name is Carol Sardin, and I'm the Chief Director responsible for Human Settlement Planning in the Department of Human Settlement. In attempting to respond to the questions that were posed by Honorable Members, there was a question regarding what happened to Mutaka as a municipality in terms of the mining town. The province, yes, indeed had Machabing and Mutaka as mining towns. And I think around 2013-14, there was an assessment that was done regarding the availability of bulk infrastructure in Mutaka in particular. And it was a study that was conducted by the Department of Water Affairs and Sanitation together with the municipality. And it was advised to the province that municipality is seriously challenged regarding bulk infrastructure. There's absolutely nothing. But the way plans that are unfolding, that the Department of Water and Sanitation is currently assisting the municipality, the department was further advised to slow down on projects in that area until the bulk infrastructure was conducted. So our project as a department, we were only advised to finish what was already started and not start new projects. So that is why I think at this point in time that Mutaka is not now on the list of mining towns, because we are advised to slow down on projects in that area, especially projects regarding infrastructure. We have had development in Sejongstrom, for example. We've got an area that was serviced with about 4,000 sites, but we are unable to build top structures because the water capacity in that area would not be enough to accommodate everybody in that area. That's basically why Mukada has fallen off the radar, Honorable Chairperson. And with regards to spending in Machabing, Honourable Chair, I think Neville Cheney has already alluded that there were some gaps that were reported, that were not, some information that was not reported in the presentation, but we will update the presentation and submit it to them. There is a substantial amount of money that we are currently spending in the area. Just in summary, as Honourable Chair Tisner, I've just made my calculations. For this current year alone, in the municipality, we have spent close to 141 million on various projects ranging from the planning and implementation of infrastructure projects as well as construction of top structures. We've got a big CRU project happening in that area as well. And I remember the way there was a question of why there are no challenges in Machabeng as well. I think it's not that there are no challenges as Mr. Cheney has alluded, there are gaps in the report which we will definitely update. We do have challenges in the area. I think our biggest challenge that I can highlight currently is that in one of the areas of the municipality, which is Virginia, we've got a lot of informal settlement, and when we conducted an rapid assessment in the enumeration there, it was clear that the bulk of the people that are staying in the area are mine workers. But the municipalities, unfortunately, they are lacking with regards to land availability, so we as the department are in the process of assisting them regarding identifying and possibly assisting the acquisition of land so that we are able to accommodate upgrade the informal settlement. I'm not sure if there's any other question that I'm missing, but I think I've covered all, Chairperson. Thank you.
Don't worry, if there is anyone that you missed, Mr. Cheney will cover. Mpumalanga, even though there is no specific question that has been asked to you, but is there anything that you want to comment on?
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson, Honorable members, colleagues. From Mpumalanga, I can just confirm that yes, we have updated the presentation and there is much improvement even in terms of performance. I can also indicate that we have prioritized Emalahleni as one of the biggest area where there's lots of informal settlements, and also it's also part of the mining towns, and our investment as government is mainly focused at Emalahleni. We're currently working closely with the municipality to assist them in terms of planning for bulk services in order to cater for the investment that we are actually putting in that municipality. I think that's what I can highlight or indicate for now. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much. The province of the moment, Northwest.
Thanks, Honorable Chairperson, and honorable members and colleagues. My name is Muzima Shabane. I'm the director responsible for Bojanala region, which falls within the mining towns. And I'm with my acting chief director, Mr. Fusi Bidi, who have recently started on the position, seated at the back. Okay. Just to respond to questions raised by honorable members, especially around the Marikana area. Chairperson, in Marikana, we've been implementing two programs, that is your Breaking New Ground and the Community Residential Units, as the first phase of the program. So what we have achieved in terms of that, on the Breaking New Ground, we've got a list of all approved beneficiaries who are qualifying in terms of that program. The first phase consists of 292 units. What has happened, or what might have delayed us not to achieve the that program on time. I'm sure the honorable members are also aware that the area is so volatile. Besides the project challenges itself, the community that we're implementing the project feels entitled to everything that we do there. We were implementing using 100% local laborers or subcontractors within the area. And we encountered so many challenges. Even as far as back as 2 weeks back, I was even addressing some of these local subcontractors who have blocked the project. So in that case, issues ranging from your theft, vandalism, stopping of a project, requesting higher wage rate, and all those things affected the implementation in that way, that we couldn't achieve the project on time. Another issue that we discovered also in engagement with the municipality, upon all those approved beneficiaries on the BNGs, is that during the time of December, on some of these completed units, we couldn't locate all these beneficiaries to take occupancy. Some had visited and all those things. They were not available to come forward to take those units. So there were few beneficiaries that were available at that particular time. So we could only allocate about 17 houses during the time of December. So it's only now that they are coming, but they are not coming as expected. So when you leave the units unoccupied, then you are opening up for illegal occupation. So that's what has happened after the launch was done in January by our political leadership in the area. So about 150 of those PNG units are illegally occupied. And all those units that are illegally occupied, it's not like they were complete, but they were at various stages of completion. Like some we were not, like we had not included the plumbing. There's no electricity connection even in those units as we speak to date, because of the contractor cannot be able, even if there's those connections, cannot be able to claim or make any payments towards that. So that's the challenge that we are experiencing. But out of that, we've got also 104 units that were not occupied. But through the assistance of the municipality, the local structures like your CLOs, ward committees, we have requested them that before we even complete a unit, let's identify those beneficiaries to be available so that they are able to occupy those units as soon as we complete them. So that's the strategy that we have adopted now. So the completion of units is improving as we speak. And we iterate, though, because it's so slow that we get those beneficiaries coming up front to take occupancy. So we looking at completing that project by April. But the other issue that is there that may hamper that is that we have obtained a court order for these illegal invaders. And the next court appearance is on the 24th, so that we found that what it cannot be made final, and then the illegal occupants can defend themselves on that day. But until that time, we have been unable to to take out those people of those units. Yeah. So that's, but we have sought also a political leadership in terms of Marikana on that one. But on the CRUs, there's no illegal invasion. The current process, because of due to the policy changes or due amendments in terms of the accommodating the minors within that. So we have...
You can leave the series. We had a presentation on it, and we're dealing with it separately.
Okay.
It's fine. Thank you so much.
All right.
Yeah. That's
personnel department.
Thanks, Chair. Chair, just a couple of things. I mean, on the issue of Gauteng, as well as Northern Cape and Limpopo, we did extend invites to them, and I think to be fair to them, we had also indicated it was not timeless. So that indicated that they would provide the information. So in relation to the report on Gauteng, as I've indicated, it would be unfair to be presenting information and saying that the information is not available. And what we indicated to them was that they must update the report so that the information that we give is credible and consistent rather than portraying a picture where it is. And I think Memezi is aware that there are substantial amount of projects that are underway in those areas, and I think we'd like to present a full picture that rather than portray that nothing's happening in that area. But I think of importance to note is that particularly in relation to those areas, and I think Carol alluded to some of the constraints that you have, like, for example, in parts of the Free State, that the western part, particularly of Gauteng, where the substantial amount of interventions in those mining towns is occurring, there's a substantial amount of bulk infrastructure shortages. There's been procurement issues, and part of the process, which we've now given permission, the DG's given permission in conjunction with an approval that will be sought from Minister, is that we use some of the money that has been ring-fenced for this initiative to alleviate those bulk shortages. But we'll give you a clearer picture once we get that report and present it. Chair, the issue around the discrepancy between the number of sites and units and the speed. One of the points that we need to note is that your servicing of sites in terms of a large number of the areas that we speak about is occurring in informal settlements. And one of the things around upgrading and servicing of settlements, particularly informal settlements, it's a lot more slower, it's a lot more contested, and there's a whole range of things. And I think one of the things that you're dealing with here is that in many respects, a lot of what was planned for was, as the DG would say, aspirational. And I think what provinces and municipalities are now finding is that if you don't do the planning properly, if you don't do that legwork, you find yourself meeting obstacles which then delays. Whereas on the other hand, when you're constructing the units, it's already in areas where those obstacles have been removed. So you'll see, particularly on this slide, it gives you an indication that your construction of units is a lot better in terms of performance against the servicing of sites, and that's something that we need to. Chair, in relation to the donation of land, I think as part of this process, particularly in areas where there are mines, it's about a partnership. And one of the fundamentals, and I think President Zuma has indicated this intervention is about a partnership between ourselves as government, the private sector, communities. So it's about that. And in many of these areas, you have mines or mining companies that own land. So, for example, in the case of Marikana, Lonmin donated the land, and the value of the land, Muzi, was what, 12 million? 10 million. 10 million. So the land was donated, and as government, we're then developing on that land. So that's the donation of the land, and Minister is also taking this quite, so she's given the instruction and also met with a number of the mining companies to be able to look at partnerships, but also what is it that they bring to the table. Because I think what we need to be clear about is at this stage, government's funding probably 95% of this intervention, and Marikana as well. I think our investment to date is 194 against a land donation of 10 million. So I think we must concede that government does a lot more in these areas and is doing a lot more in terms of its output. Chair, I think the issue that I'm not sure Muzi did cover this issue, but I know that one of the issues we've picked up in a lot of these areas is that, for example, just an example, is provision of energy. In many respects, Eskom was the primary supplier of energy. For example, in Marikana, it's not Rustenburg municipality that provides the energy or the electricity. It's Eskom that does it directly. And in many respects, Eskom suffers from certain capacity constraints, and hence you will find there's a lag between when the house is constructed and when it's reticulated. And what we did do as the National Department is we intervened and we called the Department of Energy, because we now have a friend in the Department of Energy, XDG, and Muzi will tell you that Eskom has now started with the electrification, so there's been movement on that. So there are those things that's happening. Chair, I think just in summarizing and I it's not comprehensive. For a large period of time, these areas were not prioritized, and we must. As a result of national government's intervention in relation to this the profile has been. Very good examples is what's happening in Lephalale. You know, so although we're getting all our energy from that area, there's a substantial amount of households that are living in informal settlements. Unplanned, a whole range of the infrastructures not coping with the influx. There's bulk shortages. There's a whole range of things. What we can indicate, and you'll see this probably in the next quarter, is that as a result of this intervention, there have been improvements. And there will be improvements as a result of this. So, for example, the Motaka point is that we identified the fact that there was no sufficient bulk, but as a result of us wanting to include it, we then discovered that there was no bulk. But the upside of that is now water and sanitation has stepped in. And are fixing the problem. So some of the issues that are there. So on the face of it, what we're doing is that you're stabilizing and then you're improving on what the weaknesses and failures are there. But there is progress. Just the last point. For the last financial year, there's a specific amount of 1.98 billion. So that amount is specifically for it. In the next financial year, together with DPME and Treasury, we've ring-fenced approximately 1.1 billion for these areas. So it's earmarked. It cannot be used anywhere else but in those areas. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you very much, Mr. Bummer, any additions? Okay. I think it's only fair that even though the response is saying
Mpaka is off the radar for now because of the bulk infrastructure. I think in the next report we would really need to understand the progress that is being made in that area. We can't just be told that because of the bulk infrastructure, then it's off the radar. We need to probably hear progress that is being made by water consolidation in terms of the bulk, and then when do we then think that we will restart the project, depending on what water consolidation is doing. But it doesn't look like now it's just abandoned and nothing is going to be done. I think it's just important to tie that thing up when we come back to report. Of course, the report has got a lot of gaps, which we all know that it's work in progress. The report, because we would be wanting to hear the progress on this program timelessly. We all know that this is one of the areas that even the president is very interested on. So we really would want a better detailed report in the next round when we call you in. And we would also want to hear Neville, even though you're saying Limpopo and Gauteng were invited, I think it's also going to be critical for us to understand why they are not here and got that formal response of what happened. So that's because remember, these two areas, Limpopo and Gauteng, are the areas that have got most projects. And we really would want to understand progress that is being made in those areas. So I just thought it's important that we just don't leave it like that and say they were told late, or because it's important that we get that kind of report. But having said that, thank you very much for the progress report that has been presented to us. We deal with these issues obviously again next week when we talk annual performance plans. This is going to come up again, and we'll be able to interrogate it further. But thank you, officials, for being here and responding to all the items that we have asked you to brief us on about. Those were the three items that we had put so far, and I think we have dealt with all three of them. The next item is off the radar for now, just like Mukaka. The minutes are not read. They'll be dealt with in the next meeting. So no, we are withdrawing those minutes. The ones that you have, we are withdrawing them because there's areas that we want to clear them. So we're not going to approve the minutes in this meeting, which means therefore that we have come to the end of this meeting. Thank you so much. The meeting is adjourned.